We'll continue breaking down Celtics and Sixers. Sean Silver here. Brian Robb behind the glass. BostonSportsJournal.com. I'm sure he's already got something up on the game because that fourth quarter was just interminable there. But the Celtics pull it out 110-106 over the Sixers. We got some parting shots on Philly because why not? Just why not? And we'll get to your calls. I see John in the car waiting as well. We'll get to you. Sean Silver here on the Sports Hub till 7:30. 98.5 The Sports Hub. Sean Silver here. 5:37 is the time. The temperature, I'm not exactly sure, but it was just raining quite a bit outside. Much like the Celtics were raining baskets on Philadelphia this afternoon in 110-106 win. It wasn't even that close. We mentioned Kemba Walker with 32, leading the way for the Seas. I mean, just 8 for 15, 4 out of 9 from deep. Got to the foul line a lot, which, you know, means that he was driving. These are the things that we want to see. 12 out of 13 from the free throw line as well. A game high, 32 points for Kemba. Just squeaking by Joel Embiid, who finished with 30. He was 8 for 18 from the field, 1 for 5 from downtown. For some reason, he still considers that a part of his repertoire. He did have 10 rebounds. Filled up some defensive stat categories as well. 4 turnovers, a minus 8. There, I don't know the exact breakdown. I know that, you know, B-Rob definitely pays a lot of attention to the statistical nuance, but there were a lot of games where Philly was just, you know, from a plus-minus perspective, better with Embiid off the floor.
It's, I think when you just look at moving forward in the NBA, Sean, just having a center like that that can't hang on the perimeter is just such a disadvantage, especially against a team like the Celtics that are so perimeter oriented. So unless he can really punish a team down low, which he wasn't able to do efficiently enough against the Celtics with their double teaming and just smart scheming, it's not going to be enough of a trade-off to give up what Philly turned into essentially a horrendous defensive team without Simmons out there.
Yeah, and Ben Simmons, you know, definitely popping up for a lot of people in, you know, all NBA defense discussions, potentially, you know, being a defensive player of the year type guy. Maybe just didn't get the credit that he deserves. That's an interesting thing with Philly. Well, there's a lot of interesting things with Philly. But it's just kind of like, it seems like Embiid is the identity of this team, and just maybe he shouldn't be. And I kind of wonder, I mean, you look around the league, you got some guys with similar skill sets. You look at like a Karl Anthony Towns, right? I mean, there are definite differences in the skill set. But, you know, seven-footers, Towns can take it outside, and Embiid really can't. But they're in situations, I mean, the Minnesota situation is obviously bad. They are not a good team. Philadelphia makes the playoffs. They have for the last 3 years. And you kind of wonder, who's going to be the first one to a ring? Is it going to be Karl Anthony Towns, or is it going to be Joel Embiid? And maybe the answer is, well, it could be Joel Embiid, but potentially not here.
I really think they need someone that Embiid respects, like, or just is scared of as their next head coach. Because, I mean, with conditioning, Sean, this isn't a new story for him. This has been pretty much every year in the postseason.
It's wild.
And it's the same old story. I mean, like you talked about earlier, the Celtics know it most because we've seen the most of Embiid out of any fan base outside of Philly the last few years here. But they either need to figure out, okay, we need a guy in here that like won't take crap from this guy and make sure that he's coming ready to play and not giving up from an effort standpoint at points in games. Or they need to play him less because the in-between right now is not working. And from what I talk to from people around the organization, it sounds like the only guy he really respects down there is like Elton Brand, who's the guy who's the architect of all these bad moves this year. So that's not great either. So I don't know who that guy is, who's that next head coach that he's not going to take anything from him in terms of bad effort and stuff. But I think that's the first thing you're looking for, Philly, this offseason before you decide to move on from him.
I wonder if like, you know, he'd even be amenable to that, you know, or if he just reads his own press clipping so much. And I don't know. I come on as an unabashed Embiid hater. I know there's a lot of people around the league who love him, and I know that there's obviously a middle ground here. You don't have to think that he can do no wrong, and you don't have to think that he's probably one of your five least favorite personalities in the league. I don't know exactly where you fall on that, or, you know, as an objective journalist, Brian, if you're even going to entertain that particular conversation. But I just feel like this guy really loves himself, just like really, really loves himself. And I don't know if that type of player, if that would work, or if that type of coach would work, or, you know, what situation is necessarily going to work for him. Or if we're looking at, like, you know, Dwight Howard 2.0, where it's like, wow, here's a big man, you know, he's just really, you know, really into the brand, but may not be into the hoops all that much.
It's a fair question now. The bloom's off the rose. It's like, yeah, you don't hear much about the funny tweets or Instagram. It's just when you're not getting out of the first round so often. And again, this series was a mismatch. They really didn't have a chance without Simmons. But to be swept the way they
could have grabbed a game or two.
Yeah, could have grabbed a game or two. But I think what we saw in this series is that you need to put really good shooting around Embiid to get him at his best. You need to keep, because he's not good enough at handling those double teams, and he's not going to win games for you on defense. So if I'm the Sixers, I don't know what you do now, Sean, because it's like, I don't know who has the worst contract now, Horford or Tobias Harris. Like, they got a bunch of guys that don't really fit well together and are stuck on long-term money.
Well, maybe Elton Brand moves down from the front office. If that's the guy that, you know, maybe it would be just better to get, you know, Elton Brand, who went into the position with no, you know, management experience of an NBA basketball club, straight into the front office. Maybe we'll give him a shot at coaching, because he could get along, certainly, or maybe motivate the best player on the team. 617-779-0985. Do want to get to Brad Stevens' post-game comments. You know, he's obviously got to be pleased with the health and performance of Kemba Walker. You know, obviously, to his, I guess you could say, running mates. I don't know. Tonight, this looked like Kemba's team to me. And that's kind of a cool feeling, because for a long time, we've just been assuming that it is Tatum's team. And long term, it's going to be Tatum's team. And everything Kemba says is like, hey, it's cool if it's Kemba's team and Jaylen's team. And, you know, don't forget Marcus Smart deserves Defensive Player of the Year. Kemba is not shy to give props, you know, to the guys on his team for their abilities. And they're going to be the guys, you know, who are running the show in the future, certainly. But this is the guy who you signed to the big contract, and he's healthy, and he comes through in the playoffs multiple times, but particularly tonight with a game where it's just like, wow, this guy was waiting for a game like this his entire career. So we'll hear what Brad Stevens has to say about that.
Hey, Brad, now that the series is over, did Kemba Walker look better to you than you thought he might look, or were you feeling really confident after seeing him through the 8 seeding games?
I've said all along, felt great about our plan. Give a lot of credit to Kemba and a lot of credit to our trainers. They executed that plan. That's not easy to do. You know, and he didn't like playing limited minutes building up. He didn't like not practicing, but got the knee stronger, got ready to go for trying to be the best that we could be on August 17th. We said that from the get go. And, you know, I thought he was really good. He was great tonight. And he'll have to continue to be really good.
Abby Chin.
Brad, congratulations. How long do you allow yourselves to celebrate or savor this before you look ahead?
I mean, I think one of the jobs of a coach is to be prepared for what's ahead. And so, you know, obviously we've got an idea, you know, and get ready. Obviously it's 3-0, but get ready for, you know, if Toronto closes it out tonight, to be ready to play whenever they tell us we're playing. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, there's not a lot of savoring when you're in the middle of it. I think you end up looking back on things after, you know, seasons are over, careers are over, people move on or whatever, and that's when you enjoy it. But, you know, we got to play better in the last 3 minutes of the game. That's all I care about right now.
John Corrales.
Brad, obviously we know what Kemba can do. we've seen what he's done over his entire career. But did you see anything kind of extra from him today, you know, for a guy that's never won a playoff series, to have him come out and play like this and get his first series win?
Well, Kimba had it, was dealing with a little bit of, he was a little under the weather this morning and didn't feel great. So he didn't even, he walked through with us and then went and got checked out by the doctors and even missed the film. So I was a little bit worried about him just from the standpoint of how he felt. But, you know, I think he's just a warrior. He's a competitor. The guy loves to play and, you know, doesn't surprise me that he's been so good even under those circumstances.
So Brad Stevens, obviously high on Kemba Walker's performance. And yeah, he's been waiting for a game like this his entire career. I think there was some undue criticism of the player, you know, for not being a winner when he'd just been in a terrible situation in Charlotte. I mean, there was what, maybe it was a 2013, 2014 where like, no, it was, it must've been before. Was it the it was, 1 year?
It was him and Al Jefferson.
Yeah. Al Jefferson was like, you know, putting up Al Jefferson numbers, like doing classic vintage Al Jefferson stuff. And they actually had a chance to experience, you know, some level of success. But other than that, geez, I mean, you can't blame that guy for not having been in the spotlight. And now that he's been in the spotlight, he's definitely shown that he is up for it. Interesting, too, you know, coming off a couple days ago where there were some questions about his availability. Good to know that, you know, with the unlike the NHL, the Stanley Cup playoffs coming up, the NBA does not have back-to-backs.
No.
So, you know, that would be definitely tough. But, you know, Kemba Walker coming from the Hornets, you know, to make a pun, you know, in the first half of this game, certainly the way he came out, he was looking like a murder hornet out there. We've all heard about those and the havoc that they can wreak on an ecosystem. That's what Kemba Walker was in the bubble. That's what he was in the third quarter on Friday night when he went on that 8-0 personal run. You know, what, hit a three, had an and one, had a classic Kemba pull-up jumper, you know, from the mid-range. Just the fact that he's able to do it in all the ways that he usually does it is great. But, you know, it does give me a little bit of pause where they're talking about, you know, the maintenance is still definitely coming into the picture here.
It is. And it's funny, Sean, when they signed Kemba, I actually went back and watched one of those playoff games in, like, 2013-14 just mm-hmm. to get a sense, you know, what's Kemba like in the playoffs? Is he a guy, you know, the numbers, you get a lot of the 10 of 25 nights where he just has to do everything.
Yeah.
But is it like, is it on him or is it he just sent him the supporting cast? And he came to play in those games. And he pushed a good Heat team to seven games in that series back then with just Al Jefferson and a bunch of nobodies around him. So now, I mean, you hear him after this game just saying, you know, we have so much. Like, we have so much talent here where now he can – The Sixers had to put Josh Richardson on Tatum that whole series, which meant Kemba could go to work. And so that is, you know, he's not going to have it easy, obviously, against the Raptors, but that's just a whole new world for him in Boston from that standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, and Kemba, certainly earlier in his career, his shooting percentages were not particularly high. I think he figured out how to be effective, you know, with, I guess you might just say, a lack of help, particularly in the backcourt, you know, in wing positions. It just generally wasn't there. I mean, when he got there, it was him and Crash Wallace, basically, and then you had Al for a little bit, and then, you know, you wind up, his parting shot is him averaging 26 points a game last year or whatever it was. So, kind of closing out a thought on Kemba. Grandy talked pregame Friday about how Kemba, you know, had been constantly smiling and how, you know, the development of Tatum and Brown around him fostered that. We mentioned how he was kind of stumping for Smart for Defensive Player of the Year. He's going to be facing a team with Toronto. He avoided Ben Simmons. He wouldn't necessarily have Ben Simmons on him in this series, but, you know, he avoided having Philadelphia with its full defensive artillery, I guess you could say, in this series. With Toronto, you know, that's there's going to be some matchup questions there. You just hope that he can stay healthy and, you know, give it his level best. You know, it's never a question of effort with this guy. It's just a question of can the knees stand up to what is required? Because and you predicted, I think, B-Rob, is this one's probably going to be a seven-game series and could go either way.
It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be all four semifinal series in the NBA, I think, are going to be must-see TV just in terms of how good and how wide open it feels like the league is right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, just coming from where we're coming from, where we sat home for a bunch of months, and I mean, you know, we're still sitting home to some degree. Life has not returned to normal under any circumstances, but at least our precious basketball is back and is being played at a pretty high level. You know, the guys we expect to do stuff are doing stuff, and you know, the matchups, the way that they're fleshing out here are certainly something to watch. So we'll finish up with Philly. We'll get into Toronto. We'll take your calls. Again, 617-779-0985. And we'll have Bruins. Sean Silver here, Brian Robb alongside, going up till 7:30 here on the Sports Hub.
A lot of people always want me to be a big man, and they want me to be Shaq, but this league and this game is completely different. They call a bunch of offensive fouls all the time. You can't elbow people, you can't use your elbow, you can't push people all over the place. You can't post up as much anymore. You gotta move the ball and all that stuff. So I just gotta work on my game and just fit whatever the team wants me to be. You know, I can be dominant down low, but then again, to help the team, it's not always about me. It's about the team. And
so we'll get into our parting shots on the 76ers and Joel Embiid as the Celtics pull out the 110-106 win in Game 4 of your Eastern Conference quarterfinal series. Sean Silver here on the Sports Hub, heading towards 7:30 when your Boston Bruins pregame will be starting up. Judd Surratt, Bob Beers will have you for that one. And we'll, you know, we'll watch Bruins Lightning, listen to Bruins Lightning tonight. That's going to be a fun time. It almost looks like we had some lightning hail. I'm seeing Jimmy Stewart on Twitter tweeting about hail. What the heck's going on out there? What we do know is that the Celtics sent the Sixers packing. The Toronto Raptors await them. And, you know, we're going to have, obviously, the requisite fallout from the Celtics-Sixers series. You're going to have people talking about Kemba Walker's 32-point game. You're going to have, you know, various opinions about Philadelphia's failures. And you're going to have a lot of hand-wringing over Joel Embiid. And Joel Embiid doing a little bit of it himself, talking right there about, I mean, and again, it's kind of, you know, you always wonder what the questions are for context and what specifically he was asked there. But sounding like he, you know, he's got some problems with the way that the league is officiated, because it doesn't allow him to thrive perhaps the way that he thinks that he should be able to, perhaps, you know, throw an elbow or back down on somebody. I mean, the classic big man getting away with everything in the kitchen sink series that I can think of is the 2001 finals, when it was Lakers, Sixers, and Shaq against the defensive player in the year in Mutombo scored over 30 a game because he was just allowed to run Mutombo over, who he outweighed by probably about 80 to 100 pounds. And it's just, you know, getting whatever he wanted. And you know, there's the alternate perspective where it's like, oh, well, you know, people used to beat the crap out of Shaq in the low post. Like, that guy got fouled all the time. He didn't get to the line nearly enough. Well, let's all say thank you for sparing us the extra trips to the line for Shaq. But Joel Embiid, he got to the line plenty of times in this series. He got his fair share of you know, fouls called on a Daniel Tice or whatever. And frankly, if you ask me, he is a physical hazard out there. You know, for my other line of work, I had to take a hazardous what the heck was it? Like a safety training. And Joel Embiid is something that I think I would need to wear a hard hat for if I encountered him in a work environment. I constantly see Joel Embiid sending people to the sideline because he falls. I saw him injure Tobias Harris today briefly before Tobias Harris really took a KO punch later in that game because he just fell into him. And it's like, I don't know with Joel Embiid, because he's always going to be talking about something. Even when he's not talking, he's typing. Using the phone keys and or the computer. You know, maybe he has a PC at his home. I'm not sure, but he's getting his message out there somehow. And his message now is that, he can't dominate the way that maybe some people think that he should, because he gets called for offensive fouls and the like. But, I don't know. to be a Sixers fan right now and have to listen to that after just watching. You probably didn't expect, after Ben Simmons went down, the Sixers to beat the Celtics. But you probably felt pretty good about how they played against them in the regular season and at least thought that you would give them a series. And now what you get is this. I don't know. I mean, B-Rob, I don't know how you feel about, what Embiid actually said there. Or if it's just, something to divert attention from the car crash that's going on.
I thought it was going to be worse when I initially heard someone talking about him complaining about the offensive fouls.
Sure.
But I think his bigger point does stand in the sense that, like we talked about earlier, it's a new NBA, and unless you have shooters around you, you're not going to be able to dominate the game down low. And so that's a big picture issue for the Sixers. They don't have the personnel right now to match up with teams like the Bucks or the Celtics or the Raptors in a 7-game playoff series, even when Simmons is healthy. So whether they try to just bring a new coach in there and have him fix this issue or blow up this roster to some kind of degree, maybe pick between Simmons or Embiid, it's going to be a fascinating offseason for them.
It is going to be an absolutely fascinating offseason. And, luckily, if you're a fan of the Boston Celtics, you don't have to consider any of these questions right now. And even when you do get to the offseason, whether it's an elimination at the hands of the Raptors or potentially the Bucks or maybe the Lakers or Clippers, or with the way that Dallas has been playing this afternoon, although the Clippers are coming back, we don't have to face those sort of questions ever, I think, this summer, unless some real catastrophe happens. And let's not try to go there. The Celtics are moving on to round two. Things are still sunny, even though the weather sucks. And we'll keep it going here. We're going to get into Celtics-Toronto in that second-round matchup up ahead in this hour. We will transition to the Bruins as well, and as always, we'd encourage your phone calls. Right now, though, I'm going to give you the Sports Hub headlines. We got a tight one between Dallas and the Clippers as the Mavs look to tie that series up at 2 games apiece. Sean Silver here on 98.5 The Sports Hub, going till 7:30. The Boston Bruins will play game one of their Eastern Conference semifinals matchup against the Tampa Bay Lightning. They dispatched the Carolina Hurricanes in 5 games, and now they have the privilege of playing one of the top teams in the league in round two. Coach Bruce Cassidy says that Nick Ritchie will be in the lineup along with Anders Bjork for this one. Judd and Bob have the call of the game. 98.5 The Sports Hub, starting at 7:30 p.m., driven by the all-wheel drive Honda CR-V. The Boston Celtics winners today over the Sixers, 110-106, sending Philly home with a 4-game sweep. Kemba Walker with 32, Jason Tatum, 28 points. Boston awaiting the Toronto Raptors, presumably at round two. They will get underway with Brooklyn at 6:30. Right now, the Mavericks, about a little over 3 minutes left in that one, 116-111, their lead as a basket was just scored over the Clippers. So that one, the outcome of that game, still in doubt. Red Sox losers today to the Orioles. They are the first team in MLB to 20 losses. And the Northern Trust down in Norton, that one, I'm not sure how the weather's factoring to that one necessarily. All I know is that Dustin Johnson, 29 under par. He's on the 16th hole of this one, and he is 9 shots up and looking like he's going to secure the trophy down there. Sports Up headlines brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. They're open with stay-in-your-car drive-through oil changes to make sure your car is running at its best for when you need to be on the road. Visit gettingoilchange.com. Save up 20% on your purchase. I'm Sean Silver, Boston Tover Sports. 98.5 The Sports Up. Your next update at 7. 6:07 here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. That means I'm with you for just under another hour and a half. We already got about 2 hours in the books, taking you from the Celtics postgame to the Bruins pregame. I'm Sean Silver, Brian Robb behind the glass, BostonSportsJournal.com. That is a man who can talk some hoops as we pivot from the Sixers series onto the Raptors. We will talk Bruins coming up. And we also want to take your calls as well at 617-779-0985. I do see Brandon in Easton on hold. So it looks like Brandon wants to talk about the Celtics and potentially the Bruins as well. So let's have at it. We're agenda-free here. Why not? Brandon, how are you doing?
I'm good, Sean. How are you?
Doing great. Nice to hear from you.
Nice to hear from you. It's nice to hear you on the radio.
Thank you.
So I guess what I want to talk about, obviously the Celtics marched right through the Sixers, and it was sort of, I think people thought that it would be a little more difficult than this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and as far as like the rest of the Eastern Conference goes, they don't have to worry about a Kawhi Leonard anymore. So I think the road is pretty open in the East I'm not much of a basketball fan, but like as an outside observer, it doesn't look like it's the same kind of challenge as it would be last year. But then I look at the Bruins and they've got Tampa. And then after that, Philadelphia is hot as a pistol. I think the Bruins have a much more difficult road ahead than the Celtics do. The Celtics should waltz into the Eastern Conference final, if not the finals at this point, right?
Well, I think that we're going to give proper due to their second round opponent. And yeah, they don't have Kawhi Leonard, but the rest of that team, for the most part, were a part of a championship team last year. They have multiple all-star or former all-star players. And, a part of Toronto's success are the same things that, kind of power the Celtics. It's their coaching, A. And, B is kind of like their distribution of star power. They got a lot of different guys that can hurt you. While I guess Jason Tatum may be the highest wattage star in that Celtics series, I don't think you want to discount Siakam or anything, that Toronto has going on, whether it's Lowry, whether it's the different ways that Marc Gasol can impact a game. Ananobi could have a big game for it. But yeah, they're not. It's not a Tatum wattage star or a Kemba wattage star. But I think they're a worthy opponent. And then, of course, you got Giannis Antetokounmpo staring at you for the conference finals. Now, for the Bruins, well, let's just say they paved that road. They could be taking on the New York Islanders right now if they'd actually showed up for the round-robin games.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you on that one. I think they laid an egg during the round-robin. But, I think losing Tuukka Rask certainly doesn't help either. And, Tuukka's had his struggles in the playoffs, but at the same time, he's a Vezina-caliber goalie. My question is, who's the bigger loss, Gordon Hayward or Tuukka Rask?
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Tuukka Rask. I just think that, the position. I'm giving you a lot of bullet point answers here, Brandon. But, the position, I think that in hockey, the netminder is, probably one of the two or three most important positions. I mean, you can't win period in hockey without a very, very good goalie, or at least a decent goalie who goes in a hot run. Think of like Dwayne Rollison in the 2011 Lightning, getting them to the Eastern Conference Finals, or Jean-Sebastian Jaguar way back in like 2003 or whatever it was for the Ducks. I mean, you get a decent goalie who goes in a run, and that does a lot for you. But Gordon Hayward, probably your fourth option on the Celtics. I got no time for the Tuukka haters out there. I think that's undue. I think for every example where, someone can theorize that, he quote unquote pooped his pants or whatever they want to say, you can come up with a number of other examples where Tuukka has done well, done good by the Bruins, and he's been a huge part of your success over the last 7 or 8 years. So, that's tough. Luckily, they have an excellent backup. And, it does make you wonder where the offensive load, the offensive punch is going to come from with Gordon Hayward out on the Celtics. With the Bruins, you can directly say, okay, we have a backup goalie. We have confidence in that goalie. But, you know, who picks up 17.5 points a game for the Celtics? So it's an interesting question.
Yeah, I guess my serious concern is what happens to Halak on the. They've got two back to back potential in this series coming up, and they haven't played back to back in the playoffs really, and they don't play Halak and Rask in back to back games. They, you know, they, one of them takes one start, the other takes the other. And before I let you go, because I got to grab some Chinese food here, I just want to say that I want to be the first one to mention Chase Winovich for NFL Defensive Player of the Year this year. Thank you.
We're dipping our toe into Patriots territory here, which I've not covered yet, but you can always count on Brandon and Easton to do something for the Wolverines. As far as Halak, you look at that, games 2 and 3 is a back-to-back, games 6 and 7 are a back-to-back. You wonder exactly why the NHL is doing it this way. I mean, the NBA is still proceeding at kind of a measured pace. I know they're every other day with their schedule, but they at least give you some rest there. You know, I was talking with Howie Sylvester, executive producer for Bruins Hockey, coming into this show, and he just kind of said, you know, what if game 2 goes to overtime? You know, maybe then we're seeing Darth Vader. Maybe we're seeing the third string B's goalie, and that obviously Tampa better suited for that. You got Vasilevsky, who's a workhorse goalie by any measure. You know, certainly a guy who gets more starts than Tuukka or Halak, and you know, a guy who starts 60 to 70 games a year between the pipes for Tampa. So yeah, we want to take your Bruins calls. You know, we'll mix them in, but I got a great resource here in terms of. You know, going over the Celtics and Raptors second round series, and I think, you know, we could play a little hoops detectives here. Look at some of the big questions for this series, some of the keys, and you know, maybe look to dig in a couple of mysteries here. As you know, Brandon may not think it's a very imposing matchup, Brandon and Easton, but I do. I think we need to give the Raptors their just due heading into this series with the Celtics. 617-779-0985. My name is Sean Silver. You can hit me up at that phone number. Hit me up on the tweet machine at the Silver Fox, Silver with a Y. I'll be here till 7:30 on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Hey, everybody. Sean Silver here on The Sports Hub. And if you think my enthusiasm has waned in the last couple of hours since the Celtics sent the 76ers packing, it has not. It's just become, I think, a little more seasoned, you know, where our takes have gone from, you know, say, immediate reaction to the sweep to more, you know, contemplative. We're going to start breaking it down here. We're going to get into the Toronto Raptors series, and I got a great resource for that, as I mentioned, headed into the break. Brian Robb from BostonSportsJournal.com. You can reach us if you want to join in this conversation. Fire some questions at us. 617-779-0985. I'm on Twitter, at the Silver Fox, Silver with a Y. You can check out Brian at Brian T. Robb, and Robb is with two B's. And let's get it going. Let's chop it up because, you know, it's, as Brad Stevens said, yeah, you can savor the victory, but you have to be aware of what's ahead. And I think they have a realization of what Toronto brings to the table from their talent standpoint, from their coaching standpoint. The Raptors, despite the fact that they don't have Kawhi Leonard, are not to be trifled with. And just a quick aside, you know, Kawhi Leonard now plays for the LA Clippers. And that game has gone into overtime. So they will have some bonus basketball from the bubble there. And, of course, the Raptors and Nets going to tip it off. We assume Raptors because they're up 3-0 on Brooklyn, and Brooklyn has a severely undermanned team.
It's Raptors.
It's Raptors, of course. But I will just point to a tweet that I received about how do you know that the Celtics don't get production from Hayward? The combination of Smart and Tice with the points, and Smart as the IQ and Smarts with the ball, obviously. It's next man up. This is the same team that didn't have Hayward and Kyrie and made the Eastern Conference Final. How do they replace that production then? It's about doing it as a team, not just one or two guys. Now, B-Rob, you've watched every game. The question, you know, one of the bigger questions for me this whole season, and I know it's come up for you in a bunch of your, you know, your chats that you do, the bench. Just
the bench.
When you're talking about next man up, you really don't have that many seasoned players. I mean, yeah, you have a lot of upside players on your pine, but you don't really have a lot of seasoned players where you can say, I feel confident with that person stepping into a bigger role.
No. It's the good news is they did a lot better than I expected them to in this series, Sean, if you go down the board. Cantor played, you know, held his own against Embiid in his in those minutes. Grant Williams, I thought, emerged from out of rotation into a guy that, you know, they called, whatever, like 5,000 of him in 3 minutes today, but he played smart. He's hitting threes when they're open, which is huge for this team.
Yeah, four of them in the series. I mean, which, you know, is not a lot, but for a guy who gets the kind of minutes that Grant gets, just the fact that he's providing that presence.
No question. So if they can have anyone on the bench hitting threes for them, they just need one guy to do it, and Grant seems to be that guy so far. But I feel like in this series, Sean, against the Raptors, Brad Stevens is just going to have to go mix and match every night here off the bench. Kind of like he did today in game four, where, you know, you try Ogilvy here, you try Cantor there, you give Rob Williams a shot, Langford, Grant Williams, etc. You don't need all those guys, obviously, but if you can find one or two that are playing decent enough to around, you know, next to Tatum and Smart, you know, for those 5 or 10 minutes each half, so you don't get your doors blown off when the rest of the starters are on the bench,
right?
Then you're in good shape. But the problem is, you don't have that consistency yet. You don't know who those guys are every game. So that's where the challenge comes in for Stevens, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, that's his, you know, we already talked about the what Nick Nurse poses, you know, on the opposite bench, and just the rise of Nick Nurse as a basketball mind, and, you know, now piloting the NBA champions and trying to get them back to that stage again. It's a tough coaching matchup to begin with because of what Toronto's throwing at you. But not only that, you got to consider what you can throw at Toronto, and some nights it's going to be the kitchen sink. And you know, you mentioned Cantor, and, you know, the performance they got out of him in this Sixers series. I just feel like, in terms of, you know, everything, coaching, just the DNA of the team, Philadelphia has really nothing in common with Toronto.
No,
and I wonder the other thing along with the bench that has been on my mind, you know, week by week at this NBA season, and even during the time that it was on pause, was, hey, when we come back from the bubble or in the bubble and we get to the playoffs, that big man situation hasn't changed. And it's just kind of like, all right, well, how do you divide up the minutes? I don't see – I love Cantor. Again, that old school bruising, you know, bully ball, gets points off of putbacks, boxes out, that kind of big. I love that player. I'd love to play with that player. But I don't see him necessarily being effective in this series, and I think that puts a lot more strain on their resources.
I think you noticed, Sean, because the Raptors have a real point guard. They have Kyle Lowry, who knows how to dice a guy like Cantor up in the pick and roll. And so Cantor's going to have to guard against that. He's going to have to guard against the perimeter. He's going to get targeted a lot. So that means guys like Grant Williams, Rob Williams, and Daniel Tice, who was pulled early today, Sean, but actually had a pretty good second half and hit a couple threes. And so that, like, how big do you think he's going to be to this series from that standpoint, because the Raptors are certainly going to try to cheat off them, I would think, and to key on the other guys.
Yeah, well, it's the age-old question with Tice. It starts with, can you stay on the floor? And he obviously logged 27, well, maybe not so obviously, but he logged 27 minutes in today's game, and he only committed one more foul after that initial foul, you know, upon which Brad pulled him. But you got a lot of nights where he's in the, you know, first half foul trouble, or you get to a certain point or a game and Tice has racked up 4 or 5 fouls, and you just kind of wonder, like, and sometimes they come in quick succession. It's just like, what is it with this guy? He's like a magnet for fouls. So I feel like whether he's knocking down threes or not, he brings value to you, and just the fact that he can be on the court. He's toolsy, you know, as far as big men go, but mostly because, you know, he's not a big plodding dude. He can move his feet. He has things that he can bring to the table. But that outside shot has looked better in the bubble than I anticipated out of Tice. I don't know if you can necessarily rely upon it, but say if you do get it 4 out of 7 nights, maybe maybe that coincides with the games you win.
Right, and so I think a huge part of the series, can he outplay Marc Gasol?
Yeah,
and that's just a huge...
That's tough.
It's tough, but...
Even if Gasol can't defend like he used to, he still has just his offensive toolboxes. You know, the way that he can create out of the high post, the fact that he can pull it out, beyond the three-point line, which is not going to be tough for Tice to guard. This is not a guy who can blow by you necessarily. So, but the fact is, you know, Gasol's, he's a tricky old man at this point in his NBA career.
I compare him to Al.
Yeah. Yeah, in a lot of ways. But you also kind of have to wonder, you know, is he going to disappear like Al did in, what was it, game 3? Didn't Al finish with like 2 points or 4 points?
Yep.
It was just, you know, he's back out there today. And as an unabashed Al supporter, based on his, you know, track record here and having a very good NBA career, I mean, he did have a good game today, 12 points, 10 rebounds. So there's your double-double, all you people who said Al Horford doesn't get you double-doubles.
Did you hear the shot Doris Burke took at him?
I saw her trending for some reason. I don't know if it was because of that or something else, but what'd she say?
It was vicious. So Al posted up, I think it was Tice actually. And as he was running down the floor, he made the sign, you know, too small to like guard me with Tice, which he did periodically in Boston. But then Doris Burke was like, wow, I don't know, like, I guess it doesn't take much for Al to do that if you're down like 3-0 in a series. So just completely like cold-blooded shot at him.
Yeah, it is, you know, it is funny. And, you know, certain Boston players, just for whatever reason with the fan base, Ray Allen got it because he left. So everything that Ray Allen did here is, you know, now garbage apparently. Al Horford, potentially because he left, but even while he was here, he had his fair share of detractors. There's just guys, you know, Hayward's worked his way into that range. It's usually guys who get paid and, you know, people have a problem with them. And, you know, this goes back to the days of probably like Dana Barros or whatever. Oh, he's making too much money to be just a three-point specialist. But Al Horford, it is funny, despite being a person who supports Al. It just the timing with which, you know, you saw Horford's, I guess, big plays in this series. They were in relatively unimportant moments. He had, in game 2? He had like a big putback or a dunk or something where he unleashed this primal scream, and it was just like, man, that's got to feel good for Al, but it's also like, oh, they're trailing right now. You know?
Like not the best timing. It's
just,
but no one should be, I'm with you, no one should be mad at Al Horford. Al Horford got offered a truckload of money with what looked like to be a contender. To play a spot that he wanted to play at power forward.
Yeah, he didn't want to be the five here the whole time he was here, even though it was very effective for them the way that the NBA is played now.
Right. But he did the Celtics a huge favor, too, because now they don't have that contract on the books for the next 3 years, which is huge for them because clearly that is not going to be a good deal.
But there's still a part of me who says Al Horford in this series against Toronto would just be, you know, I mean, quite obviously be better to have in your big man repertoire than a guy who fouls too much, who's 6'8". Although, again, I guess height doesn't necessarily matter against Toronto's bigs. A first-year guy in Grant Williams who played well in spots. A guy in Cantor who's not going to be good against the pick and roll or anything that Toronto does. And I guess the Time Lord, who, you know, we all love.
What do you think of the Time Lord? He kind of didn't get a chance again this series, Sean, after game 1, which I get because Grant Williams played well, but how much... If you're Brad Stevens heading into game 1 against the Raptors, knowing that Cantor is going to get, you know, beat up on the pick and roll by Toronto, do you go to him over Grant Williams first? Like, what's your play there?
Well, you know, Ainge said on TNR a couple of weeks ago that, you know, the question, I think John Wallach was trying to, not to bait him, but just kind of say, like, you know, hey, Danny, you know, should the Time Lord be getting more minutes out there? And he had kind of said, hey, well, he was getting regular minutes. I mean, he was playing 14, 15 minutes a game, which is, you know, not robust, but that's definitely a bench contributor for your team. It's more minutes than, you know, any of the Toronto backup bigs get, a guy like Boucher or Rondé or, you know, any of those guys. So, you know, Williams is playing 15 minutes a game, and clearly in some of those seeding games, he looked good. But I think that just the propensity for the mistakes which entirely hinges to the fact that he didn't have reps. The hip injury took him out in December, what looked like a promising campaign. He had to basically furiously get ready and get back in. And sure, the seeding game against Brooklyn is going to look fine. But, you know, when you're in there against, for whatever effort that he was giving, you know, a Joel Embiid or other NBA caliber bigs, there's too much of a propensity for his weaknesses to get exposed. I don't know how much you can play him. You kind of have to, though. Like, how do you carve out 48 minutes between Tice and Grant Williams?
Yeah, that's going to be tough, too, in terms of the fouling. Mm. And they're going to try Cantor. They're going to try to get away with it for, I think, a few minutes and a half, maybe when Lowry goes to the bench.
Sure.
Throw him in there. But it's going to be it'll be a lot easier if you can get 10 or 15 minutes out of Rob Williams, the guy we saw in the seeding games. And you hope with him that it's just a situation where in that game one of the playoffs where you're going up against Embiid, this is your first real postseason action, and things are going too fast for you. It's like fast forward when you're out there in terms of the shots you're taking and the mistakes you're making. But for now, Grant Williams just looks more under control and more savvy on both ends of the floor right now. And so I think he has Stephen's trust a little bit more at this point.
Maybe that's something you get out of being a four-year college player. He did go 4 years at Tennessee, right?
That's right.
Yeah, so maybe that's just he's ready for the moment. Grant Williams, maybe that's going to be the name on the tip of Celtics fans' tongues for the next couple of weeks ahead. Obviously, though, the principles, you know, if these are things to be worked out, the bench, the big man situation, but heading into this series, it's great that you can say you got Kemba Walker healthy, you got Jason Tatum doing Jason Tatum things, and, you know, you got Jaylen Brown ready to go every night. I mean, not a great showing today, 6 out of 15 from the field, but as usual, he impacts the game in ways beyond his line score. Just 2 for 9 from behind the arc. That's actually been a part of Jaylen's game that, you know, I think we've all been pleasantly, pleased to see develop, particularly this season. Just shooting the long ball. Hopefully he can get that back on for that Raptors series, because I do think they're going to need all the firepower that they can get. 617-779-0985. I'm Sean Silver. You've also heard Brian Robb with me as we're going up till 7:30 on the Sports Hub.